The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. It is Friday, the end of a week, and I want to tell you just for openers that it was a long time in my life that I really had come to the conclusion that I would never know what really happened in Berlin in April of 1945 to Adolf Hitler, Eva Braun, and all the others who were in the bunker in the last days. I really figure that the various stories running around about dentures and pieces of body here and there and the Russian lies and all that would end up being the status quo for basically forever. Thanks to Harry Cooper and his hard work. Now, there are historians, there are historical writers. Harry does it all. He visits, he talks, he interviews, he travels, and he writes, Hitler in Argentina. The documented truth of Hitler's escape from Berlin. Yes, you heard me right if you're new to the program. We now know exactly what happened, where Hitler and Eva Braun went, where they lived, how it happened. We know an awful lot thanks to Harry Cooper. History has finally been brought into accord with the facts, the reality of it. And I hope the book is selling very well. Harry, how's it doing?
How you doing?
Good.
Well, sales have dropped off a little bit.
First wave and all that.
I guess. I'm not that much of an expert on it. But those who have gotten the book, they just go nuts over it. On our website, we've got some of the comments people have made, but it would overload the website if I put them all up there. Now our next book, Hitler and the Secret Alliance, I just got the proofing copy about 6 hours ago.
Uh-huh.
So we should be ready to ship that one in about 2 weeks. The front cover that your friend Steve's put together. Oh, man, is it sharp.
It's another classic.
I hope so. I hope so. It's ready for shipping in 2 weeks.
That's great. All right, we'll talk more about that as we go along. But let me go back to Hitler in Argentina. Have you come across anyone yet with a brain who is in the so-called establishment, academia, doesn't matter, who gets what you have done here, what you have uncovered and put together, thanks to some help from your friends who were there, one in particular, in the bunker? Have you come across anyone who has literally said, my God, we now know, or something similar?
Yeah, quite a few people have. About the only ones who, there's a couple of hard heads that just want to believe that in their comment that Hitler died fighting at the head of his troops when, in fact, the story has him dying and cowering in a basement, but that wasn't the case.
Right.
Most people are opening their eyes and realizing that is exactly what happened to Hitler. He got away, and he died a natural death in Argentina in the early 1960s, and that Eva Braun was alive until very recently, because she was born 1912. So it's not difficult for people to live well into their 90s or even over 100. Some of our members have lived over 100. Reinhard Hardegen, the skipper of the first submarine that sank a ship in American waters.
First one, yeah.
Right. He sank the Nornis off of New York in January of 1942. He just turned 101 this past March. And I got an email from one of his children. His son is in his 60s, but he said that the three kids, the two boys Well, they're very upset because their 101-year-old father is still driving their car.
That's funny.
Yeah, I told him that he probably should move to Florida because a 101-year-old person is required to drive a car here in Florida. Slowly
good.
In the wrong lane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, incidentally, before I forget it, I was sitting in the Atlanta airport about 2 weeks ago waiting to head down to or over to Europe. I got to talking to a lady sitting there and told her about my book and everything, gave her my card, and she says, Harry Cooper, I think I saw you on television. I said, no, the television people don't want to hear anything about this news. They want to leave it like it was. And then she thought for a minute, and then she says, Rents Radio, I've heard you on Rents Radio. Okay, so you got fans everywhere there, Jeff.
That's nice. That's very nice. That's good to hear. We do have an incredible audience of very intelligent people all around the world. And we seem to be pulling in those who get it. And those are the people I want to talk to.
Right. The establishment, for whatever reason, and I'm not going to talk in broad spectrums, but when it comes to Hitler and Eva Braun, Martin Bormann and so many others, they just have blinders on. We had that situation with the Travel Channel and a program called Monumental Mystery. They contacted me. They wanted to do a show on Hitler's escape to Argentina. And because I am I'm not patting myself on the back, but fact is fact, I'm the world's expert on that. Oh, we were doing real well until they, more or less, wanted to make sure that we didn't close the book on that. That, oh, yeah, he probably did shoot himself in the bunker. So I told him I wasn't going to do that. So all of a sudden, I was persona non grata.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you don't dance to their tune, they don't like you. I've never been able to dance to somebody else's tune. I can't do anything that I don't have in my heart. So, so much for that.
Got it. Now, the other thing that is important to keep in mind is that Harry just got back from Europe again, and there is another trip coming up in 2015, which we'll mention a little bit later as well. For all of you who are new, what Harry and I do on the program when he's here is we usually go on a patrol, a picture tour, as it were. And if you can get to rents.com, click on photos under Harry Cooper's name and load them up, because we're going to go on a little journey here pretty soon. So we want to make sure you're all set to join us. And these are always fascinating pictures, so don't forget about that. So again, the book is Hitler in Argentina, The Documented Truth of Hitler's Escape from Berlin, and it will knock your socks off. It should be, of course, a bestseller, because all it does is straighten out one of the biggest lies in history, but it'll have to filter its way through, again, to the group of people out there who really want to know, who have the ability and the facilities to process paradigm-shifting information, to understand that the Americans made a deal with the Germans for technology. That's how it was done. Many thousands, maybe tens of thousands of the upper level of the Third Reich got to go to Argentina after the war in exchange for Wernher von Braun and all the rest of the genius engineers and rocket scientists that Germany had. That's the simple long and short of it. It was a trade. And it was a damn good trade for us. Look where, when us was a good country. Look where it put us technologically. I mean, it's extraordinary. All of a sudden, we leaped forward about two decades, and that's the truth.
Yeah, all within the span of about 30 days, we jumped forward, like you say, probably two decades. We just outran everybody's technology because we actually lifted it from Germany or traded for it or whatever, but Germany suddenly didn't have any patents anymore, but the majority of that was a trade-off, as you say. The rocket scientists, all the submarines, the Type 21 submarine, which became the foundation for so many other countries' submarines. The French built the Daphne. ethnic class.
Isn't it funny? And I go back again to what I said, last week, maybe earlier this week. Germany, at the time of World War I, and again at the time of World War II, had achieved the pinnacle of brilliance and success in all the major disciplines that any country or society pursues.
Right.
Literature, music, science, it doesn't matter. Germany was the light to the world. And when you are the best of the best, people come after you. They don't like you, they want what you have, and they seek to destroy you. That's what happened in World War I. That's what happened in World War II. Even Winston Churchill, as most of you know, in his biography said, this was not a war about the National Socialist Party, the Nazis. It had nothing to do with the Nazis. It was a war to destroy Germany and the German people once and for all.
Yeah, that's true.
That is the truth. And that's why the killing continued in Germany until about 1953. From 1945 to 1953, approximately 6 to 8 million more Germans were liquidated. Those were the Germans who remembered, who were very strong nationalists. And the Mossad, the Zionists, went in there and basically killed them. It's not talked about, but it's the truth.
Even today, Jeff, people aren't being killed, but they're being made pariahs if they...
They're marginalized, they're locked
right.
away.
If they say that they don't believe in the so-called Holocaust or whatever, and if they say anything good about Hitler or the Reich, if you're in Germany and you do that, you go to prison.
That's not a joke.
That's not a joke.
It's so sad to see a great nation, a great people like Germany, on its knees in front of its Zionist controllers and masters. And that's the ugly truth of that, just the way it is. They own it, they bought it, they control it, and they're not going to let it go.
When I was over there, several of our members also came over from Great Britain for this memorial, which we'll talk about later. And one of them, a guy named Tony, all you got to do is mention Winston Churchill. He's ready to knock his teeth out. I hate that guy. And this is a Brit. He's been born and raised in England. He absolutely hates Winston Churchill. With good reason. He's the one that gave us the war, pretty much.
Well, absolutely. Winston Churchill was a butcher.
Mm-hmm.
Winston Churchill was as evil as Adolf Hitler was supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
Probably then some. I mean, and Bomber Harris, Stalin, FDR, they're all, mega killers, genocidal maniacs, all of them. The Germans, and this is acknowledged even by their enemies, the Germans had a code of ethics and honor and behavior in war that they had to kind of learn to set aside as the war progressed because no one else was honoring it.
Yeah, and in almost all our books, I know for sure, in Hitler in Argentina, we list the, I think, the 26 codes that a German naval officer had to follow. And very, very high moral
standards of behavior, protocols, all of it. They were very disciplined,
disciplined. And in most cases, in the early stages of the war, when they'd sink a ship, they'd usually surface alongside the lifeboats and give them fresh water, and in many cases give them some food and a compass. It happened to one of our members who's now deceased. They gave him a compass, told him which way to steer to get his people to safety, and then he said that we'd like to give you some fresh water, but our desalinator's down, so we'd have to give you a couple cases of beer, if that's okay. So... They were the epitome of honor. However, as you know, as a kid during the war years, and we were taught that the U-boaters, that was the biggest fear the Allies had, was the German U-boats. We were taught U-boaters, machine gun, helpless people in the water for sport, and prayed to Hitler because they hated God. And you know, that there were...
The propaganda was so ugly and so hideously distorted from reality that you couldn't even measure it.
And it's, like you say, it still goes on today. People still think Hitler started World War II to kill all the Jews and to rule the world, which is absolutely ludicrous. As I said before, one of our members, who's now passed away, Helmut Schmuckel, was half-Jewish, and he was commander of a U-boat. Helmut Rosenbaum, can't get much more Jewish than that, he commanded another U-boat, and he sank a British aircraft carrier. There were Jewish pilots, so he didn't hate the Jews. And he had no way whatsoever to invade the U.S. or any of that. It was actually the Poles that started World War II, but that's another whole session.
We've touched upon that, and any honest survey of history will show that. You've got to really look, though. You can't buy the orthodox lines that are put out by the mainstream media. None of that. It's just...
The lamestream media.
Well, they're not even media. It's just a propaganda machine. That's all it is.
Right. I remember back when the New York Times was the epitome of journalism. I mean, their motto was, probably still is, all the news that's fit to print. But it's not that way anymore.
No.
Any of them, you know, anyhow.
There are a number of books out about German Jews fighting in the German military.
Oh, sure.
Lots of them. University Press of Kansas has one out. There are a number of them. Hitler's Jewish Soldiers, the Untold Story of Nazi Racial Laws and Men of Jewish Descent in the German Military. And there were, the estimates vary, up to several hundred thousand.
Right.
And I just don't have the exact figure, but some try to minimize it down to 150,000, but we believe it was considerably higher than that.
Yeah, a couple of years ago when I was in Germany, I visited a military cemetery where all who were buried there were Jewish soldiers. So the old story that he hated the Jews is just total baloney.
Yeah. Well, remember who started the war on Germany, and was it 1933 or 31?
In the early 30s.
World Jewry declared war on Germany.
economic
war.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Now, you can see the front page. It's on the Internet. It's
okay.
There. So, okay. That's World War II. Now, we come fast forward to Harry Cooper today with his new book out, coming out in 2 weeks, which will be very interesting, and the photos. So let's go to the photos and start our walk down memory lane, as it were. There's a lot of fun stuff here.
A couple of topics, too, so we'll be shifting gears a bit.
That's fine. You have been so lucky, my friend, to be able to see all of these sites, to meet all of these wonderful people and become very close friends with many of them. No matter what flag they flew under or fought under, they're just extraordinary people. World War II was so big and so huge, and you have to remember, you younger people, no computers, right? No solid-state transistors, no TVs, none of that stuff. These were men and machines, and the women played a role in it, too, of course.
Yeah, huge role.
Yep.
Rosie the Riveter and all those.
Well, Rosie built the American war machine, basically.
Yeah.
American women. And that's something that isn't talked about much either. I've posted several times some extraordinary photographs of women building aircraft and other armaments. And
my mother worked in a place called Amatorp. It was a company that made torpedoes. And during the Korean War, she worked at BorgWarner, which was a company that made clutches and pressure plates for cars.
Cars, yeah.
But during the Korean War, they were making 30 caliber and 50 caliber machine gun links, and also clips for M1 rifles. I was a weapons specialist in the Air Force, and Singer Sewing Machine Company made a lot of the 50 caliber machine guns, and you know, it was all women working in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow,
behind every good man is a woman, as they
Yeah,
certainly in the battlefield it counts.
Yeah.
Okay, the first picture shows a corner table that three or four people could sit at, it looks like, in a restaurant. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, this I thought it was cute. Where do spooks meet? And this is a restaurant in Europe where I meet with some of my agents who shall go nameless, and this is our little corner table way over in the back. Which means nothing to anybody except, well, you see that blue package there. That's a packet of files and charts, et cetera, that this particular agent, we call them SEIG agents, S-E-I-G, means Shark Hunters, Eagle Hunters Intelligence Group.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we got a ton of documents. I met with about four of them while I was over in Europe, and some of the stuff is just incredible. I can't... talk about some of it even yet, but that's where I met with one of them. And the next three pictures you see there, the two charts, etc., and the black and white photo of a facility, and the two color pictures are current pictures. That is one of the last holdouts, or whatever you want to call it, last positions of the escaping Reich people, and it is so far south, it's down in the Straits of Magellan. If it sounds like I'm stumbling here, I'm trying to read from an email I got from...
It's okay. Hold on. We'll have to take a break. Read
right
through it, and we'll
tell
come right back.
Please.
Yeah, and tell us what these charts are, too.
Gotcha.
And the black and white photo. All right, we'll be right back with Harry. Hang on. Okay, back with Harry Cooper, and we're talking about things past and things current. Okay, we've looked at the little table. We've looked at the nice little blue package. And let's go through the charts first. What is this first chart?
Okay, the first chart is just a blow-up of the second chart that says Chile and Argentina.
Uh-huh.
And the facility you see there in the black and white and color montage where I've blocked out all the writing on there.
Uh-huh.
Let me just read from the... email I got from the agent that gave
it. Harry, what, excuse me, what kind of phone are you on? You sound different tonight. We got a little echo.
Oh, no, I'm on the same phone I always talk on, but catching a head cold. Maybe that does it.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I just came back from Austria where it was in the 40s, now back in Florida where it's in the 90s.
Remember which end to talk into, though.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll try.
You're fine. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, let me... I'll just read, so if it's a little broken, it's because his English is not as good as we'd like it to be. And anytime you want to jump in, just holler.
Okay, we're looking at a boat leaving a little pier or a
That's
little dock.
Correct, and there's a facility behind it. You see buildings back there?
Yeah.
And then what it looks like today in those color photos, here's what this agent, Cobia, we call it Cobia, him, her. The last top secret German base was south in the Magellan Strait in the second fjord in the Admiralty Group. This is down in the Tierra del Fuego, bottom end of South America.
Uh-huh.
In front of the entrance of this deep second fjord is a small island, so small you can't see from Admiralty Fjord into the second fjord. And on the last part in the second fjord was the last top secret base with a strong 200-watt radio transmitter in the war. The chief of the German Reich Secret Service, who was SS General Ernst Kaltenbrenner, in November 1944, he asked Lieutenant José Heinrich Garbers about the possibility to sail with a motor sailing ship into this small water channel. Now, shifting back to Harry Cooper's words, we talked about Heinrich Garbers before. He was a German Navy guy, a lieutenant, Oberleutnant, who received the Knight's Cross, and he couldn't figure out what kind of combat he was in. Well, he was never in combat.
Uh-huh.
He had a 90-ton sailing vessel, yawl rigged, and he was going into harbors all up and down the Argentine coast through the war. So anyhow, now we go back to what Cobia sent me. Heinrich Garbers received the Knight's Cross in Berlin on the same day he spoke with Kaltenbrunner.
Huh.
So they knew that they could get people in and out easily.
Mm-hmm.
Down there in Argentina. Now, after the war, in the late 1950s, Garbers said in an interrogation for a book about his sailing trip to Argentina in July 1944 with 11 tons of cargo, that he thought General Kaltenbrunner had spoken from this base in Argentina in 1944, but the information did not get printed into the book. Garber said in this late 1950s interrogation that this particular Weisse base was existing for the German Reich Secret Service from the beginning of 1935. And in 1940 or 41, a strong 200-watt transmitter was brought in. This base was a help station for radios, which I guess means radio boosting, signal boosting.
Uh-huh.
And it was in the very rare Enigma code called Himalaya, which was never decoded by Ultra. This code was used only for German blockade steamers, blockade runners, and German armed merchant cruisers like Atlantis. The German blockade steamers came out of Japan to France to the German Reich bases. That would be Brest or Lorient. And he says about 20 big German Reich steamers, like the steamer Osorno, took the seaway from Japan through the Pacific around Cape Horn, around Fireland, Tierra del Fuego, and the course through the South Atlantic and then up to the French bases. The last three steamers were there in August and September of 1944, but all three were sunk in the South Atlantic off Brazil. So they were still using that radio station even late in the war. He goes on to say, Garber said in this interrogation that he thought Kaltenbrunner would go to this base after the war for some years, or the base was for another guest. We can fill in the blanks who the other guest might have been. He said that before his patrol to Argentina in July 44 to the Punta Mogotes Lighthouse, which is south of Mar del Plata, in Argentina, and boy, these submarines and Garbers and everybody used that lighthouse at Punta Mogotes as a landfall. Anyhow, he says Garbers went down there with cargo and two German Reich spooks agents, and he received information that in this base in Tierra del Fuego, there's a strong radio transmitter and more than 150 tons of oil for ship engines and a little float plane and two small motor cutters and a sailing motor ship, too. Now, that's the boat you see coming off the dock in that black and white
interesting.
Picture.
Interesting, yeah.
Excuse me. So they were all over the place. Let's see what else.
Well, this transmitter could, with 200 watts, I guess, an AM transmitter, could bounce around all over the place and be picked up all up and down the North and South Atlantic.
I would imagine. When I was a yacht bum living on my sailboat in the Bahamas, I had a double sideband radio, which, of course, was against the law to have because, God forbid, you could talk to somebody down the road. We had a range of about 400 miles, and that was only 50 watts. So 200 watts, I imagine.
Well, at night, those things bounce around a long way sometimes.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay, we'll get to go to a restaurant next, it looks like. Looks like some pretty...
Yep.
Pretty, looks like dessert to me.
It's breakfast, actually.
Is it? Well, all right. All right, back in a minute as Harry and I continue. Don't go away. We're looking at photos, if you're just joining us, in guests at Runtz.com. Look for Harry Cooper and load up those pictures. Be right back. Okay, let's go to breakfast right now. Next picture with Harry. Nice looking place. Simple, elegant. Where is it?
It's a beautiful place. This is in southern Austria. We go every year to the Ulrichsberg Memorial. Ulrichsberg means Ulrich Mountain.
Uh-huh.
And the veterans all come together. All veterans are welcome. But, of course, naturally, the majority were German veterans. But during the memorial ceremony, they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what country, no matter what uniform. So it's it is the world's only international veterans memorial. And we are invited as honored guests every year. And it's such a moving thing, but it's more than just the Sunday memorial. There's a Friday evening fellowship, a Saturday fellowship at the Navy League, which will headquarters, which we'll get into, and then Saturday night, and then of course the memorial on the mountain. These two pictures of the restaurant. That's the breakfast room, the Frühstückszimmer, at the hotel we stay at. In a little town called Krumpendorf. And there are many hotels in that little town, and the veterans fill up each and every hotel. For the Friday evening, the Saturday evening, get together. Now, the next several pictures.
By the way, those chairs are very good looking chairs. Nice chairs.
It's Austria, well, it's Gross Deutschland, Greater Germany. Everything is neat and clean and spotless. we've become friends with the man and his wife who owned that hotel. He is in the Austrian Army Reserves right now. No, he's in the Austrian Army. His son, who we've known since he was a little kid about waist high, is now about 6'2". And he's a paratrooper with the Austrian Army, and he's a medic, and he served 6 months over in Kosovo. So they're very nationalistic, very patriotic people over there, and neat and clean. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. And this hotel also has a sauna and a steam bath and all sorts of other stuff. But
you're going back there on your next trip?
You betcha. You betcha.
All right. That's the one that you folks listening have a chance to go on. There are openings now, so.
Right, for 2015. You betcha. And we are treated like family. When we roll in, everybody is happy to see the Americans.
Oh, nice.
Now the Saturday afternoon, we go to the Marina Kameradschaft, which is like the Navy League. Club or whatever, and you see the one picture with the big floating mine there and the cartoon drawing of the two sailors leering at the girl in the green dress. That's the entrance into their place. Then you see a few other photos of the ship's wheel and then the displays in glass and the hats, etc. And this is kind of a bittersweet story. Okay. They have this really great facility. It's down in a basement of a commercial building.
Mm-hmm.
And I belong to the American Legion because I'm a veteran. And, the Legion posts here in the U.S., they have tank out front, or and here in this area, they got a Huey chopper out in front of the place. They fly their flag and all that stuff. They can't do that in Germany. This used to be a coal bin for those who are old enough. You know, there's a huge, big room in everybody's basement where coal was dumped in, and you shovel it into the furnaces.
Sure.
So they took over this coal bin, and they refurbished it into a really beautiful facility. And we were in there, a lot of people, and there are speeches, mostly in German, but our friend Ernst Krugel translates back to English for us. And the nice thing about it, we're finding more and more younger people coming to these things to keep their traditions alive, people in their 20s. There were married couples with little kids. This one little kid fell in love with my wristwatch, and then he thought he wanted my brand new Nikon camera. No, it's just such a warm feeling that the old traditions are starting to come back, no matter how badly the powers that be try to step on them. It's like Princess Leia said in Star Wars, you know, no matter the tighter you close your grasp, the more star systems are going to escape. So the more they preach this horrible Germany story, go with your head bowed, sackcloth and ashes, the more they do that, the more people are going to say, wait, I want to learn the real truth.
So are there more and more, we'll call them museums, places where they're our memorabilia displays of war and pre-war Germany?
There are some, but you can't call them museums like that because that's against the law.
I see, because you're honoring something that's verboten.
Right.
Politically off limits. Uh-huh.
Yeah, in Bremerhaven, for instance, they have the only Type 21 German U-boat left in the world. And you can go through it and everything, but they can't call it a war museum. They have to call it a technical museum to show you the technical aspect of this submarine.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and there's a big aircraft museum we go to by Hanover. Same thing. Has to be called a technical
museum. What kind of aircraft do they have?
Oh, they got a lot of warbirds from World War II and then some from later on, but they've got ME-109 in there. They got a Focke Wulf 190. They got some hot-looking warbirds in there.
Yeah.
So
technology again, remarkable.
Yeah, and of course in the Deutsche Museum, they have an ME-163 Comet rocket-powered plane. They got a Messerschmitt 262 jet fighter, and they got a lot of stuff in there. But that's a museum for everything. It's not, they've also got U-1, the first German U-boat from World War I, is in there.
How funny. Where's that? Which city is that located in?
That's in Munich. Excellent museum. It's a super museum.
Mm-hmm.
And it was used pretty much as the role model for the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago when it was mm-hmm. building up in the early 1900s,
mm-hmm.
20th century, whatever.
Okay, looking at some of the items in the glass case,
uh-huh.
We looked at the ship's wheel. Now we're looking at the first picture. There's a large ship, battleship.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is that?
That's an American battleship, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. That was one of the German battleships with three guns in the turret. They also have models of USS Missouri and USS Iowa. So they've got a ton of ship models in there, mostly German, of course. And then items like the hats you see in a couple of the photos. And the one photo with two white hats and the submarine model in front of it, that's the model of U-995, the only Type 7 U-boat left in the world. They made over 800 of these things. This is the only one that's left. We visit that submarine also. It's up outside of Kiel. And the white hat, the captain's hat, had belonged submarine commander of the war of any nation.
Four months
past his 21st birthday, they gave him command of that submarine, told him, go on out and die for your country, because submarines were getting killed on their first war patrol. 9 out of 10 didn't come back from their very first patrol.
Unreal.
By then, the codes were broken. The American technology had outrun the German technology, and the boats were being sunk. They were losing 40, 50 submarines a month, and each time a submarine went down, usually about average 50 men went down with it. So it was, they had the worst attrition rate of any military force ever in history. 1 man out of 7 came home, and they still stood in line to go on board.
Volunteers, yeah.
It wasn't going to happen to me. It's going to happen to the other boat, but not my boat.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, 9 out of 10, they were wrong. Hess came back from 5 war patrols. He sank a handful of ships. And after the war, he became a doctor of law. And unfortunately, some years ago, he was a very staunch defender of the honor of the German soldiers. Soldiers and sailors, but in Germany, they, whether it was on the sea or in the air, whatever, they were all called soldiers. Some radical left-winger in Germany came out with some pretty horrible and fictitious stories against the German soldiers in World War II.
Yeah.
And within a week or two, my friend Hess filed a lawsuit. Hess was a doctor of law.
Mm-hmm.
He filed a lawsuit against this guy and against the TV station that was running it.
Mm-hmm.
And about a month later, Hess just up and died. So, damn coincidental. The man was 82 years old. That's not really old. And I had been over to visit him just a few months before this sudden death. And he and I were walking around this lake. We were having lunch. He was in pretty good shape, but all of a sudden, after he brought the lawsuit, bingo.
Well,
without any warning.
Seems I've heard that kind of story before.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll be right back. We have to take our top of the hour break. We got some more photos to look at.
It gets better.
Well, I can see that. All right, we'll be right back with Harry after this. Okay, welcome back. Having some fun with Harry Cooper, as we do. And sharkhunters.com is the website. It is an enormous repository of utterly fascinating World War II and post-World War II history, the experiences of the men who fought and survived of all nations, but most especially, certainly, Germany. Just an extraordinary organization founded by Harry Cooper 31 years ago, is it?
That's right, 2nd of February, 1983.
Yeah. Okay.
Way back in the old days.
Yeah, well, that's when this country still had a little bit of a, at least a, an echo of what it used to be. It's gone now.
That's sad, but true.
Okay. All right. So who is the gentleman in the red tie?
Okay. Those two guys standing together, the one in the lederhosen on the left of the photo, that's my friend Peter. He is very active over there. His father was in the mountain troops, and so he is very instrumental in organizing the mountain troop gatherings and keeping their history. The guy with the red tie, I know him. He's a friend. I can't tell you his name because it's like 10 words go into his name, and then another 10 words go into his title. He's a general. He's the ambassador or consulate to some place. His card is so full of words. You just can't read it.
His lapel is so full of little medallions.
Right,
as
and
well.
It's got one more medallion because I brought him a little medallion commemorating the decommissioning of USS Constellation. He's my
okay.
He speaks many languages. Brilliant fella.
We'll just call him Joe.
Okay,
all
Joe.
Right. Now, the next picture. You're at... obviously, it looks like the same place, just a different location.
No. This
different
is
place?
Okay. We're in Krumpendorf. This is in a big dining room in a hotel. And this is where, this is the Saturday evening festivities where hundreds of veterans come out, and the Flame of Flanders, the Flanders Division, they come usually with one or two buses full of people, and there's a lot of Waffen SS people live in the area, so they come there. The 5th SS, the Viking Division, and they eat, and enough of them speak English to where our group fits right in. If you wind up with nobody at the table speaking English, somebody will find a way to communicate. The Germans say mit Hand und Fuß, with hands and feet. We'll get the idea across.
Well, if you have a few drinks, everybody talks the same language anyway.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. And the beer over there, I'm told, is really good. I'm not a very good Irishman. I don't drink beer.
Well, you know, the interesting thing I see, the older gentleman there, balding with white hair, obviously veterans.
Oh, yeah.
Do they have a problem talking with Americans about the war? Now, I would imagine they have to be a little guarded. I would also imagine that every damn one of them knows what really happened, and that the Americans were duped, sold out, and fought the wrong enemy in the war. That would be my view. Am I close?
Yeah, that's pretty much the case. And our motto for Shark Hunters is yesterday's enemies are today's friends, and boy,
right.
It sure comes across. You don't find anybody there who's against you, and, you know, a lot of people are not happy with America of today.
Who would be? What person
in
their right mind would be?
Right. I'm not happy with our government. I think this is the greatest country God ever put on the face of the earth, but our government has been.
Not our government anymore. It's just a control corporate mechanism.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
That's another whole story. So.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We go down, and another fellow in Lederhosen.
Yeah, the only thing he's missing is his Sam Brown belt. I mean, he's dressed as a Hitler youth. And he's a nice kid. He's just foaming at the mouth because I showed him a picture of my daughter. This kid is 23, and my daughter's also 23, and she's tall, and she's beautiful. She's a part-time model. She's in her master's program right now.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, he says, you gotta bring your daughter next year. I says, no. I said, she's got a boyfriend. He says, I can take care of that. I said, she's got a father who's just meaner than hell. He says, I can get around that, too. So I said, you're not in sales, are you? Because you're not really helping your cause.
That's
nice
funny.
Nice kid, though.
And
he was there. There were a lot of, like I say, a lot of younger people.
Yeah. Well, that's good that the tradition is the history, the knowledge, the wisdom is being passed along.
Right.
Oh, that's very important. Okay, the next picture.
Yeah, it kind of epitomizes all the hard work I do here, all the sacrifices.
That's very, very self-explanatory.
I got to say, the older lady, the one on the left in the photo, that's jokingly called, that's my girlfriend. That's Herta. She's about 85 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She comes to the dinner naturally, and she comes to the memorial on the mountain where she provides coffee and sweet cakes and stuff like that to people.
Nice.
for a nominal fee, which goes to the veterans organization.
Sure.
And I think it's like €2 or €3, so everybody gives her €5 and tells her to keep the rest for the veteran.
I see.
And the other one that's...
We're not going to talk about the other one.
She's studying to be a lawyer. That's Marcy.
Well, she won't lose many cases.
Well, I bet. All she has to do is, never mind. Smile.
Okay.
That's it.
Next picture.
That's Sonia in traditional garb. And she speaks pretty good English, too. And she's a younger person who's keeping the traditions going.
And I see a lurking hand around Sonia's left rib cage.
Well, that's just so she doesn't fall over.
What is it?
So she doesn't fall down.
Well, thank you. You are a chivalrous fellow. Very thoughtful of you.
Well, we can't have people falling down.
I wouldn't think so. All right. Well, that's very cute. Very nice. All right. Photos number two. We'll click on that. And Harry and I will step forward to another page and another story. What do we got here?
There's the cop with the dog is the first one on that page, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
in this little town of Krumpendorf. This is
well, it's a car with a... No, wait a minute. It's not a cop with a dog.
Oh, we missed the cop with the dog. Okay.
Where is it?
Well, apparently it didn't get over there.
All right. Well, maybe it'll be down here. Oh, it's third
okay,
one down
there. Okay, is a car with the back hatch up.
Well, there's two of them with a car with the back hatch up.
Right. And same shot, only from a different angle.
Oh, that's the sweet lady.
That's my sweetheart. She's selling the coffee and the kusha, the cakes.
Uh-huh.
We're waiting for the bus to take us up to the mountain. See, we never know where we're supposed to meet because the nutcase left-wing anti-bar.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
you're kidding.
Know. So we never know where. And we
leave
have
it alone.
Follow
leave it
the
alone.
Leader for like 20, 30 kilometers through the countryside. And we come to this area where we're waiting for the bus now.
Mm-hmm.
And Herta, such a sweetheart. I go up there, I buy my coffee. And when nobody's looking, she slips me a little individual-sized bottle of schnapps at no charge, of course.
That's nice.
And, I'm looking at that bottle right now, trying to decide if it's too late to drink it.
Not for me. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's 11:30 here. It's too late
to drink it. It is. So you'll waste it. You can start about 8:30. Okay. Now, what I want to talk about right now is the next trip over. You just came back.
Right.
And if you want to talk a little bit about that, fine. But you have one coming up in 2015. Now, for all of you who have had a yearning to go to Europe and like history, you will never approach anything like this. Oh, they have organized tours over there. They go to all the publicly available destinations. But shark hunters, Harry, goes places where nobody is supposed to go and nobody does go.
Right.
And you get to see things and meet people and experience things that in some cases have been experienced by a relative handful of people since 1945.
Right.
It's extraordinary what happens. And I haven't been there, and if I ever go, you are taking me. That's it.
Well, you've got a spot book with us.
Well, thank you. Okay, picture number three is a little white...
The white dog.
Is that the cop dog?
No, this belongs to one of the younger people. The guy's like about in his late 20s, maybe 30 years old, and very right in his thinking.
Uh-huh.
And I could never get the shutter to click at the right time. He would tell his dog, Mach dem Führer, which I think means something like, be the Führer. And the dog would sit down and raise his right front paw up in the air.
There was somebody in Germany who was prosecuted for that.
I know.
And it was just disgusting.
If the wrong people would have seen it. But that was cute. So everybody was flipping a little cookie to the dog and saying, Mach dem Führer. The poor dog was probably getting tired of it.
Question. Are most of the German veterans or the Germans who just missed the war and understood it and who survived the horrible genocide that went on from 1945 to 53, do most of those people, well, let me rephrase it. How do they feel about the idea that Hitler and Eva Braun and many others did escape death and made it to Argentina?
Oh, that's a real easy question to answer because the people I talk to over there are very staunchly separated. Most will say, yeah, I thought he got away. While a few hardcore, no, it's not possible. He never got away.
Uh-huh.
So I talked to them for a while, and before long then they start realizing, yeah, he did get away, because this is not theory, as you know, Jeff. This is not theory. This is findings backed up by fact. We've got hundreds of documents from FBI that say that our country knew he got away. I've talked to people down in Argentina who knew him, who met him. I stayed in the same little mini hotel where he stayed one time, and as you know, I'm going back down in March to Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay to meet with some more people that my European contacts opened the doors with.
I hope those of you who may have missed our earlier programs, Harry and I are on Shark Hunters, all of our programs, commercial free. with pictures, you can look and listen and learn so much. It is quite extraordinary. When is the book Hitler in Argentina going to come out in German? Do we know? Will they allow it there?
Well, I don't know if they'll allow it or not, but we've had a little bump in the road there. I was supposed to be meeting this past Monday. I was supposed to be meeting with a German publisher in Graz, Austria.
Uh-huh.
They were going to translate it into German. They were going to publish it. They were going to distribute it. And 2 days before I was supposed to get on the plane, I got an email from my friend Peter. That's the guy at the Lederhosen in previous pictures.
Yeah.
He says, no, don't come to Graz because the publisher just figured it would never sell. And I'm thinking, what the heck?
No. It'll sell big.
Of course it'll sell. So now
got,
I have to
find out.
He got
talked to.
Yeah, well, he might have had cold feet, I don't know, but I'm just going to get it translated into German. We'll have it published out of the U.S.
And ship it out of the U.S. if we have to.
Sure, that's exactly
or
what will happen.
Or find an Austrian bookstore that will handle it.
Right.
And it can go
We're
from there all
We're going to get it translated into Spanish as well.
Good.
As you know, there's a publisher over there who is in the midst of translating it into French.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got the worldwide distribution for the book in French.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows how big that's going to be? I don't know if people read French books as much as they read English or Spanish, but we'll find out, won't we?
We will. They're very interesting. All right. We've got two gentlemen dressed up with lots of medals.
Yeah, the one in the light blue Coast Guard auxiliary uniform, that's yours truly. Because I was with the Coast Guard Auxiliary for 12 years. I
uh-huh.
left some years ago. I was flotilla commander. And the other fellow is Ernst Prugel, who's in the Coast Guard Auxiliary of Australia.
Huh.
So, and we encourage they, I'm sorry, not we, I'm a guest.
Australia, you say?
Australia, yeah. He's an Austrian, but he lives both ends of the world.
Uh-huh.
I guess he ducks winter that way.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. The organizers encourage everyone to wear their military uniform to show solidarity between all the veterans of all the countries. And we've had people in our group. We had one guy who was a senior master sergeant in the Air Force. He wore his uniform, and a guy who was a full bird colonel in the U.S. Army with his, et cetera, et cetera. And it just looks nice that way. And, of course, some of the medals on the uniform I have there are definitely not U.S. Coast Guard awarded medals.
I understand.
And what are they going to do, throw me out? I'm already
I don't
out.
Think so. Yeah.
So, yeah, now we're up on the mountain when these pictures the two of us in uniform, the rest
uh-huh.
of these photos are up on Ulrich Mountain at the memorial event. And the one with the clouds is right, we're right next to the ruined church. And we're looking down on the clouds. We're so high up in the air. It's just, the scenery is incredible. It just
mm-hmm.
takes your breath away.
Mm-hmm.
Then we move, we see inside the church, no roof on it. I don't think it was bombed. I think it just fell apart. I mean, this church was built before the United States ever came into existence.
Well, interesting. They ought to put the roof on it. They don't want to lose the rest of it. But, yeah.
Yeah, and it's privately owned. The whole mountain is privately owned by one guy. You've got to have a whole lot of money to be able to buy a mountain. Then the next couple photos are looking down again, and then there's two pictures of me standing by the edge of the cliff. And
you've lived your life that way, Harry.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty much the case, yeah. Driving Grand National stock cars, working for the mafia a short time, and all the rest of this, yeah. Then there's a picture of the five cops. You see the picture of the five police?
I see the inside the church with the ceremony going on.
Yeah.
And then I see you with a gorilla.
Oh, well, we've gone quite a ways ahead. Apparently a couple of the photos didn't come up.
Now, we're outside the church. Where it looks like we're moving inside. There's some plaques on the wall.
Right.
And we have the two photos of the clouds down below, very beautiful. And then we have you teetering on the edge.
Oh, okay. So
and then we're back inside the church with the cross and the flowers and one gentleman
and the guy is saluting.
Yes.
Right, yeah, okay. That's the president of the group that puts it together. This is Herman Kenduzzi.
Uh-huh.
He's also a veteran. And at that point, when he saluted, they started playing their version of Taps, which is Ishada Aina Kamaraden, which is an incredibly moving song. And let me tell you, Jeff, all these 85 and 90-something-year-old men stood and were saluting and tears running down their eyes while this song played.
I have no
question. They remember all their friends that didn't come home.
Yeah.
Yeah, very moving.
Well, I'm very heartened to hear that ceremonies like that go on and that there are people who remember. I only wish that more younger people would go and talk to these people and understand and recognize that older people are living monuments in a way
and
deserve to be given every possible courtesy and all respect, whatever their political views. I mean, they've lived through it. I mean, they have, right or wrong, done their best for what they believed in or what they were told to do, and they, no soldier served his country any harder than the German soldier served Germany.
Oh, boy, that's for sure.
And that's not to knock anybody down anywhere else.
No.
But man for man, I mean, they were just...
the American combat veterans.
We think about it. It's a country the size of Texas...
Yeah.
Took on the whole damn world, practically, east and west, and almost pulled it off. So
They were just overwhelmed by sheer numbers, the manufacturing capabilities of the United States. There were only three countries with the Axis: Germany, Italy, and their military has never been exciting. And Japan, Germany and Japan didn't really cooperate well, so there's just the three countries where on the Allied side there were 92, including the manufacturing capabilities of the United States and the Soviet Union that could afford to just lose a million people tomorrow and still keep going. So they struggled and they staggered a lot, and when people come over with us, we're treated like family.
When is the next trip next year to Europe?
This time next year, late September, third week in September.
Got it.
We're going to put together a two-week-long trip. We go to Nuremberg and, the stadium where Hitler used to stand to make his speeches. We go there. Anybody can go there, but we go inside. Most people don't even realize there's an inside. There's a huge reception hall inside.
Huh.
And on the door it says, shark hunters are welcome. You know, it says, Eingang verboten.
Yeah.
And the gold swastikas are still inlaid in the ceiling, and the old, what people think is a 12-legged swastika, which is really a sunburst, that's still inlaid in the ceilings. And Hitler's office is there, and it's just like it was at the end of the war.
Now, this is the stadium.
That's correct.
And it it's in good repair?
No, it's in horrible repair.
Mm-hmm.
They passed a law within the last couple of years in Germany that says stuff like this must be preserved, and that stadium is a national historic site. However, passing a law that says you must maintain it is one thing. Coming up with the money, that's another whole ballgame. Estimates are 70 million euros, which is about 100 million Yankee dollars, just to keep it from falling apart anymore.
Huh.
We're not going to be able to go in there much longer, even though one of our members over there is the assistant mayor, and he's got the keys to everything, because the building is on its way to becoming unsafe. So,
okay, I got you.
Yeah, bummer.
Right. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned me with a gorilla. Is that the picture you're looking at next?
Yep.
We've got thousands of members in 76 countries, so I don't know them all. Well, this is one I just met for the first time over there, and it's excuse me, it's a good thing we're friends.
I'd say.
I look like a dwarf.
You do?
I'm 5 foot 10, 190 pounds.
Yeah, no, this is a big guy.
This guy is incredible. He's about 6'8", probably 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And he speaks fairly good English. Like I say, it's good he's a friend.
Funny.
Yeah.
Great pictures. Great pictures.
Yeah.
All right, we have to pause just for a few minutes. We'll
tell
more
Ranger Blades.
Yes. And we'll take a look at some more of these really nice pictures with Harry as we continue. Okay, we're back, and always a delight to spend some time with Harry Cooper and go on patrol, go on tour with Harry and these pictures. Just, you learn. It's fun, too. You want to take a trip that you'll never forget? Contact sharkhunters.com. Look at their agenda and get on board. You'll have a time of your life. Okay, what's up next?
Okay, before I forget it, if your listeners would like a free copy of our monthly magazine, which electronically for the most part, they can just send me an email at sharkhunters@earthlink.net and say they heard the show and they want a free copy of the magazine, and bingo, it comes right back to them via the internet.
Very nice.
Yeah, you get the magazine all the time. So
it's extraordinarily well produced, beautiful, loaded with history. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the neat part. And when you go on these tours, you're not only going to places of history, you're meeting the men who actually made the history. The men and the women. Not too many of them left either, though. But you're meeting the people that made the history.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. Next picture, I think, is a group of five people.
Yes, the gorilla again. Hard to keep him out, I guess, if he wants in.
He is huge, for God's sake. I've known some big guys. I went to school with a guy who played defensive end for the Bears for 10 years,
uh-huh.
And he was big, but
yeah,
this guy's incredible. Anyhow, the guy with the red jacket, that's Nils. He's as tall as I am, but he's built like a linebacker.
Uh-huh.
That little white dog that says Mach dem Führer, that's his dog.
Uh-huh.
Then there's me, then the blonde gal, that's Nils' wife, then Richard, the giant, and the wife of the guy who's holding the camera.
Uh-huh.
And we're still up there at the church on top of the mountain.
Yeah.
But from that point, now we head to a different mountain. We just drive about 20 kilometers down one mountain and up the next. And there's this incredible restaurant on the top of the next mountain. Where a bunch of us, there was a whole mob. We filled the parking lot with our cars, and we went inside. And one picture with the guy walking away from the camera there, that's Ralph. He's heading in.
Ralph has warrants, does he? No, never mind. Okay.
No, Ralph's a nice guy. I've known Ralph for quite a few years. He was with us when we were in Argentina in 2010,
uh-huh.
And we went to the estate that had been Hitler's. And,
oh, he went. He went to the Mercedes house, so
that's
to
correct.
Speak. Uh-huh.
And when I was leading our group on horseback up into the Andes, and he was riding beside me, and all of a sudden my horse decided he didn't like me and pitched me, and it's the first time in my life I've ever been thrown by a horse. And so Ralph calls me Rodeo Harry now. He's a doctor of something or another, something nobody ever heard about or cared about.
An online degree.
I don't know. He lives in Germany. I don't know if they have online degrees over there or not. But he's a PhD or something or another.
Everywhere I look, I mean, look at that building. Look at the elegant architecture. The beautiful colors. It's just stunning.
Yeah.
It's just that's real history. That,
right.
That's real.
And they always keep everything so incredibly neat and clean.
Yeah. I can see.
Yeah. And the next photo is just looking down into the valley.
That just doesn't get any prettier than that.
Oh, you're not kidding. You can't take a bad photo in Bavaria or Austria. You can't get a bad meal. You mm-hmm. can't get a bad beer, so I'm told. It's just fantastic. You can't take a bad photo.
No, I see what you mean, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so
next.
So we go inside.
Oh, is that the...
That's Richard the Gorilla.
That's the big guy.
Yeah, and the kid in the Hitler Youth garb. And there's just a bunch of pictures of us sitting together, enjoying dinner. Then you'll see there's a sort of a bald guy in a pink shirt. And who the hell would wear a pink shirt? I don't know. And he's talking to a guy with a white beard and mustache.
We're in the same picture?
No, moving along a few pictures.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
All right. There he is. And
the guy in the pink shirt and a tattoo on his neck.
Yeah. This is not a prison tattoo. That if you are able to look closely.
This is AA. AA?
No, it's the Totenkopf, the death's head.
Oh, it certainly is. Now I got a magnifying glass.
There you go. That's the emblem of the 3rd SS Division.
Mm-hmm.
He was not in it, of course, because he looks like he's in his 40s or 50s. But the guy he's talking to with the white beard and mustache, he's the son of the man who was president of the Charlemagne Division Veterans Association.
Huh.
So we get people from all walks coming there, and we took all of one side room and a good chunk of another side room, just the veterans and the people from the memorial up the mountain there.
Who's sitting on the right side of the table, smiling affably in the same picture, the pink shirt picture? Who's that guy?
He's a guy I know. I've known him forever. I never knew his name. He doesn't speak English worth diddly. I don't speak German all that well. But I've known the guy. He and I are friends. I don't think even know his name. I do know when I shake hands with him, his fingers are all busted up from his time in the war. He was in the 5th Division, the 5th SS in the
Viking veteran.
Division. The Viking.
I got it.
And he got kind of injured when his tank blew up. So, now the next picture, two pictures, I told you, we eat well when we go over there.
That's a week's worth of food for me.
That was my dinner.
God.
That's what they, and I don't eat that big, but boy, oh boy, I finished it all. That's what they called the Wildenfahne, the wild pan. And the meat there, which is all the whole left side, is wild boar and wild venison. And those are butter noodles, butter spatula, and a little bit of red cabbage. Which I'm not big on cabbage. But, oh man, you don't get a bad meal over there. You just can't get a bad meal.
It looks great. If you, I don't eat meat, but it still looks great. And I'm sure it was seasoned just right.
Like butter
spatula
noodles.
Yeah.
And the next picture was the tail end of that car. I put that into the shot for a reference, and you're looking down almost a mile down into the valley. And are you going to commercial?
Let's do that, and we'll come back and do our last picture, which is another very elegant, beautiful entry to
a
building. Yeah, all right, we'll be right back.
All right.
Okay, and back to Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com, and don't forget the book Hitler in Argentina, just changing the entire history of the last half of the last century, and part of this one as well. It shows the lie, and believe me, certain groups knew the truth, but they have a lot of money involved in this myth. They profit from it endlessly. And that's the way it is. That memo from J. Edgar Hoover was a real key to me. It sticks up like a sore thumb. And what I'm talking about, dear friends, is there was a memo. I'd forgotten a year, 47, 48, maybe something like that, when prior to this memo, the FBI had been announcing that they were looking and exploring diligently rumors of Hitler and others in Argentina. And all of a sudden comes a memo from J. Edgar saying, we are convinced that there is no truth whatsoever to these rumors and stories, and there is no reason at all for us to pursue any kind of research or exploratory operations in Argentina, and so everything is canceled. Whoop, 180-degree turn. So what happened? Well, what happened in all likelihood is simply that Hoover was not in the loop, and they brought him in late. They said, listen, stop, pull your guys off. You're going to blow this thing.
That would be a good guess. And 1947, remember, that's when a group of German scientists built the nuclear research facility way down there in southwestern Patagonia,
yeah,
which we
yeah.
visited. Photos are on my website. The protector of all these guys, Juan Perón, suddenly jumped from being a colonel without much money to being a general and president of Argentina and rolling in dough. So he didn't get quite so much as the U.S. got, but he got tons of scientists. Kurt mm-hmm. Tank, the guy who developed the Focke Wulf 190 fighter plane, he went down to Argentina with about 50 more aeronautical engineers, and they built, they designed several fighter planes for various South American air forces.
They should have just kept building the 190. It didn't get any better than that.
Oh, that was a hot bird. It sure was. They called it the butcher bird because it was so effective.
Yeah.
But then they came into the jet age, and so they designed something called a pulque, which is one of the indigenous words down there. It meant arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember the Falkland Islands War from 1980, I think it was, the Argentine Air Force was the only really effective part of the Argentine military, and that was because three German pilots went down there to rebuild it right after the war. Adolf Galland, Hans Ulrich Rudel, who was probably the greatest pilot ever, and Ernst Bombeck, who wound up being killed in an air accident down there. He was training some Argentine pilots flying a Lancaster bomber. And something went wrong, and they splashed down into the River Plate, and Bombeck couldn't get out of the bomber, and he drowned.
Strange how a Lancaster would end up down there.
Well, yeah, as we noticed later on, when I was down there this past January, a very nice old guy who was a big kahuna with the Argentine Air Force, the main base was named for his grandfather. He gave me a DVD, and I was watching it, and part of it was in the late 50s, early 60s, I think, with a camera set up at an airfield, and all the different models of airplanes in the Argentine Air Force taxied by. And, my God, I about jumped out of my chair. Said, there's a Horton flying wing come taxiing by.
Yeah.
So I contacted this guy, and, oh, yeah, sure, Horton was down here building flying wings for the Argentine Air Force, but they abandoned that model. The few flying wings they had were broken up later on. So, but they're the ones that developed the first really stealth bomber, the
Correct.
Horton flying wing.
Absolutely, yep.
So it just every place we go, we find more and more history. We're turning up more and more history. We videotape it, take zillions of photos. And
how are the DVDs? We want to tell our listeners about the DVDs. How are they doing?
Oh, yeah. We finally got them in from the production company, uh-huh. Hitler's Escape to Argentina. Basically, it's 90 minutes on more more explanation of the book, Hitler in Argentina, plus some other things that we learned after the book was published. And that's $30 plus $5 shipping. Unless you're a member, then it's only $25 plus $5 shipping. See, being a member has its has its advantages.
You sure get does. Yeah.
A pretty healthy chunk off whatever you're buying. But yeah, it's moving nicely. We're probably going to have to put in an order, a replenishment order, pretty quick, because we have a situation also in which we have made Hitler in Argentina available in hardback, but you can't buy it, as you know. We're raising money for our March 2015 trip to Argentina, Paraguay, and Uruguay, and for a tax-deductible donation of $150 or more, the donor will get a numbered and hand-signed hard copy edition of Hitler in Argentina, plus this DVD, plus they will get a disc with all the photos we take in South America when we come back after March of 2015.
Okay.
So $150 or more, and these things, we're only going to make 200 of the hard copies, no more, period. That'll be it. So if you get one of the 200, you got a very rare book. If you don't get one of the 200, tough bananas, there ain't going to be any more.
Well, that's a special one for sure.
Yeah.
And on the cover, I look at the cover, and it tells so much. It just says it all.
That was designed by your friend David Dees. This guy is brilliant.
Well, we worked on it a little bit together, but he's the man.
I told you
it is. When you see the color picture of the Mercedes family-built home, I wouldn't call it a mansion, but it's a very big home, beautiful German design down there.
There's 20-something rooms in that house.
Yeah.
Plus, there are several guest houses right nearby, plus the little kitchen house, plus the little house outside that provides the steam for the heat, et cetera. It's all very self-contained. That's where Hitler lived from 1945 until 55. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody lived there before him. It was built at the end of the war, in the closing moments of the war, by the Mercedes factory down there, ostensibly for Mercedes executives to go get away and go fishing on, but we have no indication that anybody lived there at all until Hitler came there in late 45. Then after Hitler left in 1955, because the whole area was being discovered as a tourist area, skiing in the Andes in the winter and fishing in a big, beautiful lake in the summer, since then the place has been empty. It's for sale now, as you know. They came down in their price from $40 million Yankee dollars to $35. I don't think it's going to sell for a while. Not at that price.
I don't think I'll be contacting them.
No.
And okay.
The Argentine peso is in free fall right now anyhow, so who's going to come up with that kind of money?
No, and nobody knows where it's going to go either. It's not good. I have a friend who lives down there, and near Cordoba, and I asked him, I said, well, are you aware of... And I couldn't even get the whole statement out. He said, everybody knows that.
Yeah, of course. That was what I ran into. Instead of the usual, like we do in this country, you're a lunatic. Hitler was shot himself in the bunker. Down there, everybody thinks you're nuts because you're chasing a story that they all know.
I know.
It's incredible.
I know. It is. It really is. Yep.
Your listeners can learn a lot just by going to the website, which incidentally is under reconstruction. I got a webmaster is doing a lot with it, and everybody thinks that it's a great improvement over what we had before. I'm reserving judgment since I'm the guy that designed the previous one. But everybody likes this one, so if they go to that, click on previous tours, and you'll see all sorts of photos from all the places we've been. And like you say, some places people just can't go. They're just not allowed to go.
There is so much of Berlin underground.
Oh,
that
boy.
That would be another tour to kind of focus and concentrate on that.
Yeah, we do. When we go to Berlin, we go to the Unterwelt, under the world. and we're about 90 or 100 feet down. We're actually below the subway. We can hear the subway running above us. We also go into a black tower. This thing was like 20 stories high, and it had four 88-millimeter guns on the four corners.
Huh.
Then it had 37-millimeter guns all around that. Then on other platforms, it had 20-millimeter guns. So, and inside was a huge warehouse for ammunition. And
what is this building?
That's in Berlin. It's the Flak Turm, the Flak Tower.
Flak Turm.
Yeah, Flak Turm, T-U-R-M. Mm-hmm.
So it was a building that was designed to be an enormous flak battery.
Yeah, that's all it was built for. It was an anti-aircraft.
And it's still standing?
Yeah.
It should have guns on it.
Well, unfortunately, it don't have guns. They don't want to see machine guns or cannons up on the roof. But a lot of the interior has been dynamited because after the Russians took over, of course, they used everything. But I guess there was a deal between the Soviets and the U.S. or whatever, that when the Soviet Union evaporated and they left, they were supposed to blow up all the bunkers that they could. And so Hitler's bunker out at Volschanze, they blew up all those bunkers around Dönitz's secret headquarters, codenamed mm-hmm. Corrale, which mm-hmm. means coral. They blew all that up. And the Flak Tower, they tried to blow that up, but didn't get it all done. But all sorts of stuff that they had, they blew up.
Got it.
I don't know why, but it was.
It's dumb. Dumb.
Yeah.
What can I tell you? Just dumb.
Yeah.
The rage of war is dumb. And
war itself is dumb. But then to blow up all the buildings, Jesus. You know,
it's all stupid.
Right.
I don't believe.
It would be the equivalent of blowing up the Colosseum because somebody might be offended.
That's exactly correct.
And I get offended when people say they're offended. Suck it up and deal with it.
I'm with you.
My daughter's
100%.
Working on her doctorate for psychology, and she says that's how she's going to advise people when they have a problem. Just suck it up and deal with it. Pay the lady at the door on your way out. But suck it up and deal with it.
Yep.
And that's what we used to do. I'm an old fart, but when you're a kid, when you're growing up, if you have an adversity, suck it up and deal with it. Find a way to improve.
We got a victim culture now, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
Not my fault. He did it. She did it. They did it.
Right.
Not my fault.
And it's not my fault because I had a bad environment.
That's right. My tragic home life is responsible for my failure as an adult. All right, enough.
Suck it up and deal with it.
Harry, thank you. Great to talk to you. We'll look forward to our next visit next month. You take good care of yourself. Keep it up.
You betcha, and I'll have a lot more spook stuff for you for next month.
Good, great. All righty, be well.
Good night. You too.
Night. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. Okay, back with more in just a few.